Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Fowler. Fuck. I don't know what I did there. I must have been thinking of Fowler when I said my name. We'll try that again, right? In 5, 4, 3. Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Telfer and right now I am joined by my close associate, Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
And you know what happens when the Mark and Carol Thatcher of the Terrace team up. That's right, you're about to get fitted for a suit, but a suit made entirely of lower league Scottish football. As usual, we'll be looking at one game from the Championship, another from League One and a final fixture from League Two. But before we get going, I'd like to inform you about a Terrace Podcast live event is taking place at Hampden on Saturday, 19th November. It's in partnership with Children First and trying to think it'll be a good laugh. You and I will certainly be there, so that's guaranteed one laugh or two laughs when I walk through the door first and then you're in behind me.
Certainly no more than three laughs. But I mean, no, listen, I mean, for £25, how many more laughs could you possibly expect? And off a charity.
You could watch the entire 13 episodes of Badil Syndrome on YouTube for free.
Right, so there's zero laughs.
Honestly, like, I've been watching so much Badil Syndrome, like literally so much Badil Syndrome over the past fortnight.
Okay, so why? Why? So bear in mind you've seen every episode multiple times. What is it about your current state of mind that is meaning that you are delving into it again? Because that's quite interesting.
Because I hadn't watched it for a long time, so I thought to myself...
Right, so when you say a long time, how define a long time?
3 weeks. I hadn't seen an episode in 3 weeks, so I thought it was disappearing off my YouTube homepage. You know, the sort of familiar videos are there, so I had to go and watch an episode of Badil Syndrome again. And since then, just like you go into the shower, take the laptop with you, stick on an episode of Badil Syndrome, they're only 20 minutes long, you can clean your entire body in that time with minutes to spare.
So how... Right, so wait a minute. So you take an episode of Badil Syndrome into the shower?
Yeah, you basically, I've got a bit in my, I'm not going to take you through there, but I've got a bit on my, on the windowsill almost. There's like a cupboard there. I can rest the laptop on there. I'm lathering myself up, soaping parts of my body that people don't tend to see, and just have a laugh watching Badil Syndrome.
And do you genuinely laugh? Because so let's take Wednesday, for example, right? You were showing clips of Badil Syndrome to, I think, Robert Borthwick and maybe Graham Thewlis.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, they'd probably never seen those clips before, so the jokes were fresh and new to them. Mm-hmm. Neither of them laughed. But you've seen these jokes multiple times. Do you still laugh?
You know something? It's got to the stage, Sean. It's got to the stage where I don't know if I like it ironically or actually genuinely like it. It's that sort of relationship I have with the show.
It feels like that, like, you know how like some people just like they need something to, like, if they're stressed or having a bad day, that maybe it's just like a place they need to go to or a film they need to refer to or a book they need to go back to. It kind of feels like if you're going through something, Badil Syndrome is what you turn to.
I'm going through a lot, Sean. Going through a lot just now. So yes, I have been regularly turning to Badil Syndrome. Interestingly enough, Badil Syndrome starts with David Badil having a conversation with his therapist, played by Stephen Fry. And it's perhaps an avenue that I might want to explore at some point. Who would have thought Badil Syndrome turned me into a better person, a better version of myself?
I mean, I suppose when you think about it, like, if people are going through hard times, they may turn to alcohol. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they may turn to drugs.
Yeah.
But you turn to Badil Syndrome. I suppose it's a good thing.
What would you rather have, Sean? Me talking about Badil syndrome all the time, or me pissed, turning up to film a view for the terrace, absolutely wrecked, my nose bright red, slurring my words. You've got to pick.
Can I think about it for a minute?
Badil syndrome or the booze?
It has to be Badil syndrome. It has to be.
Excellent. Well, Sean, listen, I urge the viewers, in all seriousness, I know Sean and I spent the last 17 minutes talking about the merits of Badil syndrome. Please come along to the Terrace live show.
Yes.
We mentioned Sean and I will be there. There'll be 12 other people who perhaps lack our charisma and star power, but do head along all the same. Limited tickets are available, so please book now to avoid disappointment.
I believe there may be bona fide football stars there as well.
Okay, do we have any names? Do we have any names?
No, I think the intention is to have somebody from Scotland's 98 World Cup squad and somebody from the 2019 Women's World Cup squad.
I can imagine we're going to get a text. I can imagine we're going to get a text from Duncan Mackay saying, Telfer, what's Danny Denham's number?
Sean, are you still in contact with Dylan Easton?
Sean, you're friends with Kieran Bowie on Facebook. What's he up to next month?
He's visiting his mum and dad this weekend. Is he available?
Not in all seriousness. It's going to be good fun. But now, that's out of the way, Sean. Is everything okay? Because the last time I saw you on Wednesday, your eyes were bloodshot to fuck. It looked like you'd been on amphetamines for 72 hours.
I don't know what's going on with my eyes. So this is what my eyes look like if I am maybe in a room with a dog for about 45 minutes. But on Tuesday morning, I woke up and it looked like I decided to live in a kennel with a bloodhound overnight. And they're slightly better today. I got drops last night and they're slightly better. But it's not ideal. Not ideal if you're filming a television show and it looks like you haven't slept and have been taking class A drugs for about 2 weeks.
Fowler manages it. He always shows up all right. Of course, as well, Sean, we saw each other on Wednesday when we were filming episode 6 of A View from the Terrace from the 5th season. We also were in each other's company on Sunday at the RTS Scotland Awards. We View the Terrace was nominated for Best Sports Programme. It didn't win. Sadly, it lost out to a documentary about Ken Buchanan. But that's 2 years, two successive disappointments. Very, very difficult to pick yourself up off the canvas after so many shameful beatdowns. Unlucky in love, unlucky at award ceremonies. When law will of averages, we catch a break?
Law of averages will maybe win at some point.
Did you enjoy yourself?
I think what the worst thing was, like, they showed a clip of every show. And some of the Ken Buchanan clip was like, well, that seems quite touching.
Class.
And then the Craig Brown clip for Mr. Brown's Boys, which is to do with the 98 World Cup. That would make me want to watch it.
Is John Collins talking about playing against Brazil?
Aye.
Class.
And then they literally just showed a 30-second clip of a view for Terrace, and it was just 30 seconds of nothing.
I was sitting next to Fowler. I turned to him and said, this looks shit. If I hadn't watched the show, I wouldn't watch it.
Nothing informative, nothing funny. It was just a nothing clip. It was me saying, I believe it may have been something about me saying,
going to Haddington,
back to Raith. And then Joe said he was attending the Haddington game at the weekend. And that was it. Great.
I thought they would have shown like one of the, I mean, We Work. Like the show, the VTs, the little movies are made by some of the most talented young filmmakers in the country. Why not show that? Why not show that instead of Joel Skid?
Rather than me saying I'm not doing anything this weekend and Joel saying I might go to Haddington. Like, 30 seconds of shit.
Was that game called off anyway?
It was.
There you go.
Just before the Queen died.
Absolute stitch up. But nevertheless, listen, third time's a charm. Who knows, we might be nominated in 2023.
The Celtic Awards, that's what you want to win.
Okay. I'd just love to win an award.
I believe that's the next one.
I would just love to win an award. Simple as that. Just this podcast that would be up for an award.
I believe there are podcast awards, but you need to kind of encourage people to vote for you, and it all seems a bit
unseemly. A bit unseemly. I think it's the fact that the RTS Awards was sort of judges, respected peers, gives it that degree of gravitas where It's just a popularity contest, isn't it?
How did you find it? So obviously, so you have been to an award ceremony before. I haven't. How did you find them?
I think that, well, the best one that I went to would have been in February 2020. That was the Broadcast Awards down in London, where Youth the Terrace was nominated for Best Sports Programme at the Broadcast Awards. And it didn't win. It lost out to the coverage of the Cricket World Cup. And that coverage was pretty heavy-duty coverage. There were something like 30-odd cameras that were located around the grounds. An incredible production pulled together. But nevertheless, Youth from Terrace was highly commended, because I think it managed to do quite a lot on a fairly limited budget. So it was massive. It was absolutely massive. That was incredible. That was took place at a Hilton hotel in Park Lane, Mayfair, I think. Certainly one of the more exclusive squares on the Monopoly board. I remember that, thinking, wow, I'd love to have a house here, you know, maybe a hotel. But that was incredible. That was effectively like, it was like an airplane hangar. And it was just an incredible experience, like being there. And you're seeing, like, rubbing shoulders. Remember Steve Coogan walked by me, and part of me wanted to go up to and say to him, like, how much I've enjoyed his comedy since I was a wee boy. But I thought maybe not. But that was incredible. And then going to the one, it was very different, the one that we were on Sunday night. That was at the old fruit market. And it was just sort of rows of seats. But it was good. It was good sort of getting a chance to perhaps chat to people that you wouldn't normally do. I enjoyed it. But I know, Sean, that you had a shot of tequila and left very abruptly.
That was the end of me. To be fair, it was like the bit before. I enjoyed that. It was a pleasant experience. The only thing I disliked was, like, there was 25 categories and we were on our way up about ninth and we didn't win. But then there were still 16 categories to go.
Did you want to leave?
No, I didn't want to leave. But there was a bit of me that was kind of feeling, I don't really want to see 16 groups of people that are really, really happy, because I'm actually a wee bit crabbit.
That's show business for you, Sean. That's show business. We go again. We, like I say, you pick yourself up off the canvas. Third time's a charm. Who knows? 2023 might be our year. It probably won't. But do you want to talk about the football?
I mean, we're about 17 minutes into this podcast, so we should probably mention it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Like you said last time, if people don't like Sean and I hobnobbing for a bit at the start, then let us know. And I checked the Discord. There's an absolute cesspit there. But I checked the Discord and there was no comments. There was no dissenting voices there. So I assume that we're okay. Just have a bit of chat.
I think people like it. I think you can relate to it.
No, that's good. I'm pleased to hear it. But we'll get to the football. We'll do that. Right, back to the FITBA. Even though we've even started talking about the football, we will start in the Championship and we'll jump back to Friday night, where Queen's Park and Dundee enjoyed the spoils in a 2-2 draw. Pat Jarrett's opener was cancelled out by a spectacular, I will say spectacular, long range.
Yeah, I'm not sure about spectacular. I suppose it was in a way.
How often do you see goals scored from 70 yards out?
Not often, but that was a bad goalkeeping error.
And although Tommy Robinson thought he'd won the match for the Spiders with a really, really well-worked goal, Derek Osei netted a late on to win Dundee a point. Although the point doesn't necessarily do any favours for either side, Queen's Park are still in third, Dundee are in sixth. But all the same, only 2 points separate the sides. And to show just how daft the Championship is, 5 points separate Ayr United at the top from Raith Rovers in seventh. Just a ridiculous division. But Sean, thoughts on this game?
I think Dundee were lucky to a degree. They seemed to pile on pressure towards the end of the game. They seemed to get better when they brought in their substitutions. Queen's Park seemed to get a bit weaker when they brought in their substitutions. Like Dundee struck the bar a couple of times in the last kind of 15-20 minutes. However, I think in general, I think for the first 70 minutes or so, it was just a really poor performance for Dundee. And if anybody's going to be kicking themselves, as much as Dundee done okay for maybe the last kind of third or quarter, like Queen's Park should really kind of saw this game out. Mm-hmm. I think a championship is a weird league in terms of, like, see, when we start the show a wee bit later in the season, that's because we want to pull out narratives and storylines. Yeah. I don't know what a narrative or storyline is in the championship, other than nobody seems very consistent. Everybody seems kind of there or thereabouts in terms of quality, or maybe even lack of quality. In terms of, if you compare the two teams, in terms of the game, Queen's Park were the better team.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
They look like a really fun side to watch, Queen's Park, as well. I mean, only I've not had the chance to see them in person so far this season, but judging by the highlights, they move the ball very, very quickly. They look to get up the pitch, get out wide to guys like Dom Thomas and Grant Savory, who's coming back after a spell on the sidelines. And they've got a player in Simon Murray who can really stretch defences, who's quite happy to run laterally across the pitch, pull players out of position and allow these more skillful players to move in. But I think there's a lot of quality throughout that team. They do look like fun to watch, and I hope to get the chance to see them at some point soon.
See, I do think, though, that Queen's Park are better than the sum of their parts. And I know that there might have been a bit of, when Owen Coyle was appointed, like whether he was maybe a bit of yesterday's man. But I genuinely think he's doing a great job at Queen's Park at this moment in time. If you compare Queen's Park squad to Dundee's or Partick Thistle's or maybe even Inverness's to a degree, I think on paper, Queen's Park might be the kind of fourth of those four teams. But he seems to have them punching above their weight. Like, there's no, like, Simon Murray is, I suppose, their big name, but he's never really been a goal scorer. Dom Thomas has.
I don't know why Simon, I don't know, you're going back a wee bit, but just to correct you, I mean, Simon Murray, remember when he was playing for Arbroath and he got that move to Dundee United, and that the first half of that season he was scoring pretty much every week.
But Simon Murray is kind of, Simon Murray has been somebody who's like, is he somebody who is a goal scorer at the top end of the championship? Can he make his move up to the kind of bottom end of the Premiership? I'm not entirely sure about him. But what I am impressed about Simon Murray this season is his work rate.
Yeah.
So he's not just a goal scorer. He's not just somebody who's going to be in the penalty box. He's happy to work the channels. He's happy to link with the players behind him. I think there's something more about him recently than we've seen previously. He's become a different type of player.
I think you're absolutely right there. I think he gives Queen's Park's attack such flair and such purpose. And I think you saw that last season when he was out missing. It was Bob McHugh that was leading the line. Bob McHugh's obviously a very different kind of player to Simon Murray. But I think the fact that Queen's Park drew so many matches, I do think that was down to the fact that Simon Murray was unavailable for such long spells, and him being back in the team, he's probably, dare I say it, their most important player.
I know he didn't get an assist on Friday night for that first goal, but he was kind of all important in terms of the work he'd done down the left-hand side. The ball eventually made its way into the box. I couldn't quite make out what happened. It was just defended horribly. It looked like
somebody tried to clear it,
cannoned off somebody, and then went in.
It seemed to be like the ball slipped through to Pat Jarrett. Cammy Kerr is waiting for Ian Lawler to come and collect it. Ian Lawler's thinking, oh my goodness, he's waiting for me to come and collect it. I'll need to come and collect it. Then I can't remember who the third player was, seems to intervene, kicks it, and it seemed to leather off Lawler, then off Jarrett, and then into the net. It was a really, really bad goal for Dundee to concede.
A bad goal, but funny at the same time. In terms of Dundee's equaliser, I mean, it was just straight in from a Paul McMullen free kick.
Yeah.
And how far out was he?
About 60, 70 yards.
No, he was in Queen's Park's half, surely to goodness.
How far is it from the halfway line to the goal line?
I thought it might have been 35 to 40.
No, maybe I'm wrong. No. Maybe I'm wrong. In fact... I'm going to put this out to the listeners. Could you let me know? Please watch Paul McMullen's goal back on YouTube. The highlights are there. They're free to access. And let me know how far out he was when he shot.
Now, in terms of how Ferry, the Queen's Park goalkeeper, reacted to this, I would only expect this kind of flap at a ball into the area if maybe the sun was in his eyes, or if it was at Gayfield and there was a terrible wind. I bear in mind this was an evening game at Ochil View. Does Ochil View have had like suffer from gale force winds? You'll know better than me.
Very, very rarely. I mean, like, be honest, Sean, very completely fucks it.
Absolutely. He comes far too far, eventually tries to punch it, and it just kind of sails over his head, over his extended fist. And then, I mean, it's such a bad error. And I had a good save in the first half from, I saw Dundee fans giving Zach Ridden a bit of a hard time.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
For his finish in the first half. I actually thought Callum Ferry done quite well. Kind of came out of his box and kind of dispossessed him. In fairness, Zach Ridden is not the flavour of the season when it comes to Dundee fans. I understand why. I did think Ferry done quite well. But regardless, that was a terrible error. In his defence, I would say I wasn't that impressed on him when he was at Dundee, but he has had a good season for Queen's Park so far.
Yeah, the best moment in the game, Sean, was midway through the second half when Tommy Robson, who has...
Great goal.
A brilliant goal. He picks up the ball on the left-hand side. He seems to go outside, like he's going to take on... I'm sure it might have been Cammy Kerr who was marking him at right-back, I imagine it was, but it looks like he's going to go on the outside, but then quickly changes his mind and goes inside. Plays a 1-2 with Simon Murray.
Yep.
But the finish...
Lovely.
Is brilliant. He seems to hit the thing with the outside of his left foot, and just the way it bends slightly away from, like, the arc of the ball just bends slightly away from Ian Lawler and into the net. It's a really, really good goal from a player who I'm glad to say has proved me wrong. I remember you and I had the conversation when he joined Queen's Park. You're thinking the only reason he's signed for Queen's Park is because of the last bottom of the barrel full-time team in Scotland. And that's why he's joined that team, because he can't get anywhere else and he still wants to kid on that he's a full-time player. He's playing really well for them. He's been a really, really good signing for Queen's Park. And I think that he's been one of the best performers so far this season. And I just seemed to capped it all off with a really, really well-taken goal.
Aye, and I think the funniest thing was it occurred about 60 seconds after Dundee had equalised. And, like, see, as a fan, when you're watching that, like, it's so frustrating. So it's like...
You're back into the game and then you're
bending it up the opposition fans because you've just equalised, and then instantly you're put back in your box and you think, oh, I wish I hadn't bothered. I wish I hadn't bothered celebrating my own goal. But I know that was, of the four goals, that was the best of the bunch. Well, at that point, though... Queen's Park made substitutions, Dundee made substitutions.
I think the big substitution, Sean, was, from what I read on Pine Borough, Simon Murray was taken off and Johnny Kenny, a young boy they've got on loan from Celtic, was put on.
He's only
18, 19.
Yeah.
And I think he was pushed around a bit. Queen's Park lost the ability to hold the ball up high up the pitch. Dundee seemed to come on to them a wee bit.
Simon Murray can... The fact that Simon Murray is so troublesome to defences, like, he defends for the front. So if you don't have somebody that can do that, then instantly you regress back towards your own goalkeeper. And it's at that point that Dundee had a bit of foothold in the game, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. But talk about the equaliser there from Derek Osei at the end. I think that Queen's Park certainly thought the goal was offside. I'm not 100% sure. I think he might have been just
I thought Eze was playing him on. I thought Eze looked like he was playing him on. I mean, you always wonder about a goal where, so bear in mind, in the aftermath, I think Dom Thomas got booked, which was his second booking and a red card.
But the referee, that's the thing, the referee didn't realise it. It took Lee Ashcroft to come steaming out the back.
I was actually embarrassed on him.
Ref, he's been booked. What a clout. Nobody likes a grass.
Are you suggesting that Dundee players are all grassies and you wouldn't have done it?
100%. It's like the folk that say, like, and there's people we are friends with, Sean, like, all cops are bastards, no one likes a grass. Come on. Listen, let's be, if you saw an act of theft being committed out, the people would report it. Maybe some extent. Maybe. But it's a clipping thing. No one likes a clipe.
So wait a minute. So let's say Queen's Park were playing Stenny, right? Uh-huh. It was 2-2, five minutes to go. You wouldn't have been, and you were playing for Stenny. You were playing for Stenny, right? Let's say suddenly you've been imbued with footballing ability. You wouldn't be explaining to the referee that Dom Thomas actually has already been booked and he should be dismissed, and that would give you an additional 5 minutes to not only win the game, but get a win bonus that might pay, for
flooring. I don't think I could look at myself in the mirror if I told Jimmy tight lips. I ain't saying nothing.
Okay, well, that's what you're a better man than me. That's all I can say on that.
It did seem to, because I had to watch it back, and I think it's quite a difficult decision for the referee and the linesman, although I'm not sure if the
linesman puts his flag up, which
right, the referee overrules him. Okay, that's very interesting.
I do think Eze is playing him on.
He seemed to be the case, because I don't think he was pretty good, Stephen Eze. Anytime like Dunfermline looked as though they were, I beg your pardon, anytime Dundee looked as though they were getting something from the game, it seemed to be he was quite erratic, a wee bit slack.
I honestly think Stephen Eze is dreadful.
Yeah.
So I watched him at the Queen's Park Rovers game. I was there reasonably early, and so maybe like about 2:30, 2:25, which is quite unusual. And the coach was warming him up, and the coach was just sending balls into the air for him to header. And it appeared like the aim of the game was that he could direct his header back towards the coach. Couldn't do it. He couldn't time his jump to match the ball to meet it. He couldn't direct it particularly well. Now, when Queen's Park had a corner, he was able to use his height and he was still able to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually eventually scored the goal. But Queen's Park had about 8 corners. He won almost all of them. So there are advantages to him being the team. But see, in terms of a kind of footballing perspective and a defensive point of view, I'm not entirely sure he's able to do it. So I even based on that game, where, as far as I'm aware, looking at Queen's Park comments, that was his best game for Queen's Park, I'm not entirely sure his positives outweigh his negatives. And I know he has caps on Nigeria, but regardless, I'm not sure he's entirely suited to lower league Scottish football.
He certainly looks the part, and he watches about 6'5". He's a big, boy. You'd imagine
a big, big laddie.
Well, I know it's Lekal Day is playing him all, but him and Charlie Fox at centre back for Queens, those are two big boys. And I think, I'm not sure if I said this in a previous podcast, but if you're a striker and those are the defenders you're coming up against, you'd be like, Jesus, this is going to be a bit of a tough afternoon. But yeah, he seemed to struggle a wee bit, but I had to look at it a couple of times, because the ball comes in, it takes a flick off a Dundee player's head that sort of like takes it into the path of Osei to score. So, but that's the thing, if the linesman's looking across and he's got a decent look at it and the referee overrules him, I couldn't see the referee in the highlights, I'm not sure where his position was, you'd maybe ask questions, you can perhaps understand why Queen's Park were unhappy with it.
Oh no, I could totally see it, especially because the linesman has his flag up. But I suppose, like, bear in mind Dom Thomas is already on a booting.
Yeah,
and bear in mind, like, a lot of Queen's Park's attacking intent and creativity is dependent on Donald Thomas. The fact that they're now without him for a game or two or whatever it is, then that's not ideal. Just I appreciate it's easier said than done, but just button it.
There were boos at the full-time whistle. I wasn't 100% sure which set of supporters they were coming from. If it was the home supporters booing the referee, or Dundee supporters really unhappy with another. I mean, they got a point in the end. They did well to battle back.
I think
it'd
be Dundee fans.
It's not quite going quite as well as I expected for Dundee. I'd have thought they'd be. I mean, they're still in the throng of teams. I mean, it's very very tight at that division at the moment, as we mentioned earlier in the show. But I would have expected Dundee, on paper, certainly. I thought they'd a team, a capable side. That doesn't really appear to be the case. It certainly hasn't translated onto the pitch. They've really not put any runs together, anything like that. And I can understand why fans are perhaps asking questions about Gary Bowyer.
I suppose sometimes things just kind of look you in the face, and then you realise why have you not seen them at this point? And I suppose when it comes to Dundee, it's like, right, so you essentially have the same squad that you had when you got promoted last time around. However, you don't have Charlie Adam. You still have the same defence that struggled in the Championship. You don't have Charlie Adam that kind of got you at Championship last time around. In terms of strikers, you don't have Jason Cummings, who helped to get you at the Championship last time around. They've went into the Premiership, come back down, and haven't really improved. So, like, in terms of signings that have come in, I think Tyler French has been okay of the five that's come in. Other than that, it's a bit of a struggle. So they probably haven't improved as an outfit since the last time they were in the championship. However, as much as that would not necessarily dissolve Simon Grayson of responsibility, but I do think he expected to make more signings than he was allowed to.
So you said Simon Grayson. That's it. He was a former Leeds United manager. Gary Boyer.
Gary Boyer. Grayson is the his son plays in midfield.
Right, okay.
That doesn't dissolve him of accountability because he's... So something like Zach Ruddon, for example. Like, we know that Zach Ruddon is a competent and good championship striker that probably deserved his chance in the Premiership last season. Now, it didn't work. But he now doesn't look like a particularly good championship striker. So he hasn't... Boyer hasn't made that squad any better, and he hasn't added to it in terms of quality. And I appreciate there's Dundee fans who are on the fence about whether they can criticise Boyer at this moment in time or not. And I think he does deserve criticism.
Up next, Cove Rangers, Queen's Park is on Friday night. How do you see that one going?
I suspect the Queen's Park will win that.
And a very, very interesting tie at Fir Hill on Saturday. Partick Thistle versus Dundee. Thistle in absolutely shocking form at the moment. You'd have had a good look at them at the weekend when Raith Rovers put three goals past them. They're really, really struggling at the moment, Thistle.
I remember speaking about when we had a preview and we spoke about the fact that Dundee were playing Partick Thistle only in the end of the season, and that would tell us a lot. If Dundee swept them aside, they would probably win the league quite comfortably. Mm-hmm. If Partick could win, then they're a genuine title contender. I mean, here we are. Like, Dundee are sitting kind of mid-table. Partick Thistle are kind of struggling. Whoever loses this are in big trouble. And whoever loses this, if anybody loses it, then there might be some questions about whether they can continue in their post. Like, I mean, like Ian McCall at Partick Thistle has now conceded, four against Partick Thistle, four against Aberdeen. Okay, fair enough. Three against Raith Rovers, who kind of relaxed.
Basically, it's 11 goals in the last three league games. Four at Queen's Park, four at Ayr, and three at Raith. And if you want to go back, they lost four at Aberdeen in the League Cup. But ostensibly, 11 in the last three games.
Which is not what was expected of Partick. And likewise, this isn't what I expected of Dundee this season. So whoever loses, I think there may be some questions asked about how long their tenure is going to continue.
Not to be big Joe hindsight there, but I did say that when we did our big preview podcast that Ian McCall might be coming into this season under a degree of pressure because of how poorly the last campaign finished. I think that they had started very well, but they had a big backlog of games that caught up with them, and they had gone from sort of unlikely title contenders to effectively just finishing, was it fourth place they finished?
I suppose you're absolutely right, but certainly in terms of squad, I mean, we felt there was a squad depth, and they could deal with injuries, they could deal with suspensions. Now, they've got three or four players out at this moment in time through injury, but it turns out they can't deal with it at all. And to be fair, I mean, he hasn't really thrown excuses about. However, if he doesn't turn it around reasonably soon, I would expect him to be under huge pressure.
Before we move on, Sean, just want to stick talking about Queen's Park because they've getting a bit of heat online for it's been a problem for a wee while now, a lack of communication with supporters. They put out a statement earlier in the week saying that their game against Inverness Caledonian Thistle, it was due to take place at Oakle View Saturday 12th of November at 3 o'clock. It's now been moved to 5:30. That's all it said. We thank Inverness for their consideration and their help in arranging this fixture. Cali Thistle, meanwhile, put out a multi-tweet thread saying that the game had been moved because they'd come to a number, Queen's Park had put a number of proposals when they could use Oakle View, or they tried to switch the fixture so it would be played up in the Highlands, which wasn't feasible because the pitch had already been used. It would have been used five consecutive matches, which just what wouldn't have worked. And because they're ground sharing with not just Stenhousemuir, but with Syngenta in the East of Scotland League, Syngenta, I've got a home game that day. And that's why Queen's Park's match has been moved. And it's been an ongoing problem, this, that Queen's Park fans are just feeling, certainly the ones, if you read the comments on Twitter, if you read stuff on Pye and Bovril, just a lack of communication from the club. On top of that as well, that there really seems to be, the progress at Hampden Park seems to be glacial, and it doesn't really look any further forward than it has been for the last couple of months.
No, I mean, it's really poor for Queen's Park. And at a time when they are doing so well on the park, the fact that they are struggling to keep their fans happy at this moment in time is incredible. And right, so let's say, for example, that bear in mind they sold season tickets on the back of playing football at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. That's how they sold season tickets. I bought a season ticket for Raith Rovers. So I work in Edinburgh. I could still get back to Kirkcaldy on a Friday night for a 7:45 kickoff. But a lot of people wouldn't be able to do that. So right away you've put people out. The communication and updates around how that is going. So they're now sharing with Stenny. The intention or the suggestion certainly would be that they would be at Lesser Hampden at some point this season. I would be amazed if that happens.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazed if that happens. But there's been no communication around how it's going or whether they will be back.
Yeah.
The fact that there is now, I mean, the fact that there is a three-way sharing between Stenny, Syngenta and Queen's Park, the fact that they're having to move games from a Saturday to a Friday night, which people, when they're buying a season ticket, didn't realise. So you buy a season ticket presuming that you're going to go to a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Maybe can't you make a game at 7:30 on a Friday? Or even if you can make the game at 7:30 on a Friday or 7:45, what time are you getting home on a Friday?
Yeah.
And I think I thought the Inverness Caledonia Thistle update was quite interesting in that, like, if I was involved at Queen's Park, I'd be quite embarrassed by it.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking the same thing.
Because
I was thinking the same thing, that they have, that Queen's Park statement is just very to the point, no explanation as to why this happened. But there's Cali Thistle breaking it down, all the alternatives that were put forward and had to be rejected and the reasons why they were rejected. You get an understanding? That's what, when there's no communication, you'll fill the void with conjecture and rumour and gossip and so on. And you can completely understand. It's like you do it all the time. When, I mean, the whole, I don't want to bring up, but the David Goodwillie stuff, like what's happening with David Goodwillie, when there's a void of information that gets filled in and then it just becomes like, it's not helpful to anyone. And this is certainly far less severe than what Raith Rovers experienced in January. But it's not helpful. And it does detract from what has been a very impressive season so far.
And this is the season that Queen's Park should be growing their home support. Like, if they were located where they should be located, like, if you're being successful in the Championship, you are, of course, going to grow your support for a team that was an amateur side in League Two.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they're not doing it because people maybe are struggling to afford to go and watch them at Stenny, or can't be bothered to go and watch them at Stenny, or feel put out at how bad the communication has been from the club, and just don't want to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that, Sean. I agree with all of that. It's and then when you see a sort of little director's box being built at Lesser Hampden as well, then you kind of get the idea. It's like very much here's the not good enough for the proles, but here's something for the prawn sandwich brigade, to borrow Roy Keane's infamous term.
It was interesting. There was somebody who, and listen, you can. I totally appreciate you can take Pye and Bovril posts with that.
Is this the post from the guy who's got 36 years experience in construction?
A pinch of salt. Yes.
Yes, I read it earlier.
But he was not impressed at all by what he saw at Lesser Hampden in terms of weatherproofing and things like that. I thought that was interesting, but again, you take things like that with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, it's worth checking out, just because the poster himself says that he's got, as we mentioned, 36 years experience in the building trade, and why Queen's Park has just been a shambles this whole process. So I would recommend checking out. It's a poster called Bring Your Own Socks, which I presume he's been doing when the club are playing at Oakleview. Let's bounce from Oakle View and we'll take a short trip over to Clackmannanshire to the Rex, where Alloa Athletic beat Clyde 2-1. Luke Donnelly opened the scoring for the Wasps, only for Curtis Roberts to equalise with an absolute banger. And a draw seemed to be the likeliest outcome, probably most appropriate and fairest outcome on the balance of play. But in the 93rd minute, there was Luke Donnelly at once more, swinging his foot at the ball to score his second of the game, win 3 points for Alloa and condemn Clyde to a 10th consecutive defeat. Now, when we spoke in last week's show, Sean, Danny Lennon had been placed on gardening leave, but earlier in this week, it's been announced that he's officially left the club. Not much of a surprise based on him going on gardening leave and the series of results.
No, I suspect it's taken them approximately a week to discuss how much it took to get him off the books.
Yeah, well, bear in mind, of course, he'd signed a new contract, a new 2-year contract with the club in April.
Yeah, and I suppose there's a question as to why he was given that extra deal in April. I mean, let's face it, Clyde have been struggling in League One for a while now, and I would suggest that one of the reasons of struggling in League One is because of Daniel Lennon's recruitment policy.
Yeah.
Now, that might be because his budget isn't very good. I don't know. But certainly now there has been a consistent theme, whether it's the summer transfer window, the January transfer window, that Daniel Lennon consistently signs players who don't seem good enough for Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it speaks wonders of how good he is as a manager, that he has managed to keep them in League One. But certainly it feels like he has not made the most of their budget, whatever it is, season in, season out, especially since David Goodwillie left.
Hard to disagree with that. I think there was a game going back to Pine Bovril and the Clyde thread, which I had a wee look at before we recorded this podcast. There was a poster who had written down all of Danny Lennon's signings season by season. And you can say that the best of the bunch of them was when he first started, the group of players that he brought in. And that was guys like, they might have been certainly the first and the second tranche. It was guys like Ali Love, Chris McStay, Ray Grant, players like that who had done very well for himself. And I think that generally the feeling, I'm not going to tell Clyde fans how to feel about it, but I think that the feeling is probably one of like sadness and disappointment that Danny Lennon just hasn't worked out, that it's not been good for a while. I don't want to compare the two. I will compare the two, like Arsene Wenger's final days at Arsenal. But you know, someone who had done a lot of good work for the club and then suddenly it just stops working. It just isn't working anymore. I mean, I'm thinking, like, I think, I'm not going to tell Clyde fans how to feel, but this is a very much an outside looking in perspective. I think history will judge Danny Lennon very kindly at Clyde. If you remember, like, where Clyde were when he took over, I mean, just for a repotted history from Clyde over the last, like, 13, 14 years, when they were relegated to the old second division in 2009 under John Brown, they were a bit of a kiddie on club. You know, there's financial problems which played their part, of course, but for a long period, they went through a bunch of kiddie on managers, kiddie on players, guys who were nowhere near good enough, nowhere near competent enough to be managing a club in the Scottish Football League or the SPFL. And it was only really until Lennon came in that they had a team they could really be proud of again. And Jim Duffy had done well with him. He got them an unlikely playoff finishing in 2013-14. And Barry Ferguson did the same, but Ferguson's quite a difficult person to like, probably.
Well, I had 89 players to do it.
But yeah, I had an enormous squad. Can you imagine him trying to do shape this week, right? Here's the 11 players that will be starting, the 5 players for each position who won't be starting. You just shadow.
But Squid Games.
But with Lennon, he replaced Jim Chapman. In his first season, he took the club to within the cusp of getting into the playoffs, despite the fact that a terrible start under Chapman, they were absolutely on fire over the second half of the season, very narrowly missed out on fourth place to Stenhouse Muir. And in the following season, he took them up and turned them from like a mediocre or like League Two team where he found them and turned them into a very capable League One team. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to build on that. And that comes down to sometimes like very wacky management and predominantly like signing some really, really poor players. I think, though, history will be very kind to Danny Lennon in his time at Clyde.
No, I think so as well, but it's also not the first time we've seen, I suppose, Danny Lennon being judged on his signings. I remember when he was at Alloa.
Oh, yeah.
I remember there was issues about his signing policy. I think the issue was he went on a summer holiday too long, and they kind of felt like they were kind of behind when it comes to signing players, and they never really recovered. I think in terms of Danny Lennon, he is Clyde's best manager in recent years, but his time had run its course. Now, that also doesn't mean that they will be able to replace him competently. That doesn't mean that they'll be able to replace him with somebody who's better. But regardless, it felt like he'd come to the end. I mean, 10, was it 10 defeats in a row?
9 under his watch. This was the 10th.
At that point, it's time to go.
There's a funny story that David Weatherston tells about working with Danny Lennon at Alloa Athletic. He told it on the Tell Me's Pelly podcast that I recorded with him. Weatherston had been completely frozen out at Alloa and was effectively just training. He wasn't really getting off the bench, barely making any impression whatsoever. And they were doing some training, and it was him and a couple of other players, and he scored a volley from training. And Danny Lennon went, "Brilliant finish, Stevie." And you think, well, that's great. He doesn't know my name. However, it came to the game at the weekend. Stevie Hetherington, who also had barely featured as well, he was suddenly brought out of nowhere and brought into the starting 11.
Have similar haircuts?
I don't think so. Stevie Hetherington and Davey Weatherston don't look anything like one another. But I think that's quite a funny story there, just perhaps about some of the quirks that he had. But this game, Sean, we were talking about it. I'm not sure if it'll make the cut for tomorrow night's episode of A View from the Terrace. But having watched this game and spoken about it, I think that this is the perfect example of when you're down, you're down. When your luck's out, your luck's out. And it certainly seemed the case for Clyde here.
On the plus side, if you want to look for positives in this Clyde performance, I thought they were worthy of a point.
Yeah.
If not more. Like, let's say, I mean, obviously Alloa kind of got the win on the last minute. If Clyde had got the win on the last minute, you wouldn't have said, that they don't deserve that. Like, they feel like they deserve something from the game. And that maybe bodes well going forward, because I don't know if that's been the case for the last numerable defeats.
I think so, yeah. They've been completely outplayed and outmaneuvered. But it's the calibre of the goals they lost, I suppose, was really poor. The first goal, the ball's played down the left. I'm not sure who it was. I think maybe Ross McLean plays down the left. Ross Lyon, who is a player that's been getting a bit of heat, we spoke about him on last week's show, he gets the ball flicked over his head, and then the ball worked into the left, and it's played to Donnelly, and Donnelly takes a swipe at it, but it deflects off Peter Grant's knee and sends it past the goalkeeper and high into the net. And those are the sort of things that when that happens, your luck's out. And then, of course, immediately after that, Peter Grant, up the other end of the pitch, has a header that's ruled it, I think, maybe for an apparent push on Jay Hogarth.
I think it was a push, to be fair. I thought it was a foul.
I thought it was a foul as well. But that's the sort of thing, you see these, I don't want to sound like an old crank, but you see these decisions given sometimes. They come back into the game through a really, really good goal from Curtis Roberts. I mean, the finish is
lovely.
Exquisite. Great, yeah, it's great. A really good goal. But to capitulate in the way they did at the end, it's effectively a free kick in the halfway line. Alloa send the big boys up. It's lumped into the box. I think it's Scott Taggart that takes it. Just a punt into the box. Clyde don't deal with it. And then the ball falls to Donnelly, who just puts the laces through it and sends it into the net. And these are the factors. That's probably why Clyde are going to get relegated. Them and Peterhead are going to go down. It's because of those moments, just the lack of quality at key moments, even when the opposition aren't playing particularly well and you're having a better than average game. When these moments go against you, that's a sign that you're going downstairs.
I'm not necessarily disagreeing with what you're saying. However, based on Saturday's highlights against Alloa, I think if Clyde were to play, I don't know, whoever wins the kind of playoffs in the second division, they might have a chance. they weren't rotten on Saturday. They were okay against a team that's currently sitting fourth or fifth in League One. I thought they were okay.
It's just I think that, you know, I'm not a football player. You know, I've not been in a dressing room. Just I wonder what the morale is like amongst the Clyde players at the moment when you lose a goal like that in the 93rd minute. When you think we've got a point, this is something to perhaps kickstart the season, put a wee bit of distance between us and Peterhead, who of course got a very impressive point on their own when they drew with Edinburgh. So that's the gaps narrowed even further between the sides. I just think that you'd just be scunnered. And I don't know if it's the sort of thing that where you go out onto a football pitch and because of what's happened in the last 10 games, you think that, geez, oh, we're probably going to lose this. There becomes a sort of gallows humour. I don't know if the players are making jokes in the group chat or whatever, just saying things like, oh, here we go, another defeat. I don't know. I would hope not. I wouldn't want to see like a losing mentality like that. But I don't know how these. Oh my goodness, Kieran Tierney's just scored an absolute stunner for Arsenal there. Ah, yes. So I'm just watching this for the viewers at home, for the listeners at home. I'm watching the Europa League on the television while I'm talking to Sean, and he's caught in my corner of my eye there. That's why I thought that. I mean, we've been in the positions, not necessarily in football pitches, but like at work when things aren't going well, you have this sort of gallows humour and kind of just everyone sort of groups together just and sort of revels in the badness. I don't know.
Yeah,
you're looking at me. You're looking at me like I've said something really unpleasant to you.
I think the problem with Clyde is, and Peterhead, I don't see any other teams getting dragged down into the bottom three.
The league's already beginning to look a wee bit detached at the moment.
However, based on Saturday's performance against Alloa, I think Clyde may finish ninth and would not be. I wouldn't rule them out of winning a playoff against the League Two winners.
No, I think that they're going to go down. They're playing against Airdrie this weekend, Sean. An Airdrie side who, hitherto, the weekend's match against Montrose had picked up 1 point in six games. All of a sudden, they smashed Montrose open, beating them 4-0. What's your thoughts on this match?
Airdrie win.
Okay. Well, of course, this is the team that's going to stay up by losing to Airdrie. Nice one. And then Alloa Athletic, a team we've not really we've spoken a lot about Clyde, but what's your thoughts on this Alloa team? I do think the management of Barry Ferguson really has set them back like a couple of years.
They're performing very well. Like Brian Rice, I think, has got them performing pretty well. I think they have a chance of finishing in the top four. And when you look at the squad that they have available, that's pretty impressive. Like I know. I don't think anybody on the terrace necessarily thinks that Brian Rice is a fantastic manager. I think he's doing pretty well at Alloa, to be fair.
I think he is. I've actually just pulled up the results there. I mean, the losses that they've had, they've actually done very well. The only loss they've had against Dunfermline and against Falkirk. But other than that, I mean, they've beaten Peterhead, beaten Clyde, beaten Airdrie, Montrose, Clyde, Peterhead. Okay, so that's the calibre of the teams that they're beating.
Like Connor Salmon's having a good season. Is it Brad Rodden that plays up front?
Yeah, Bradley Rodden
doing very well. Luke Donnelly, like we've discussed Luke Donnelly on previous podcasts in terms of like where should he play. So when Abro signed him, it was like right. So is he somebody who could play up front? Does he play it wide? Does he play behind a forward? Abro's actually played him in midfield for one of the games recently. I'm not entirely sure Brian Rice knows where to play him either, but regardless, he played him behind the forwards against Clyde and he ended up scoring two. So I think Donnelly is a capable League One forward and I think he will assist them in terms of the promotion push. I wouldn't be surprised if Alloa finished top four.
Maybe now that you mention it, because when the leagues was set out at the beginning of the season, before a ball had been kicked, I foolishly assumed Falkirk and Dunfermline and Queen of the South going for the title and there's one spot up for grabs there. That I don't think that's the case now. I think Queen of the South are going to be down there. Like, I think Queen's
two spots up for grabs.
Yeah, Queens will do well to finish in the top half of the table, actually. I believe the way they're playing at the moment, that's perhaps a discussion for another podcast. Yeah, I think that the teams will be looking to finish there. Montrose, Alloa, Airdrie. I know they've not had a fantastic season so far, but they have shown that at times that they're a capable group of players. I don't know. Maybe they could do. But maybe that's my own ignorance when I opened it by saying that Ferguson had set the club back. I thought that last season they were challenged to get out of the division. That didn't happen. Maybe this is the season they do. Maybe it's taken Brian Rice to come in and clean up someone else's mess. And he seems to be doing a very decent job of it.
No, maybe he's just a better manager than Barry Ferguson.
I think there's a lot of people that could say that, Sean. A lot of people could say that. And let's round things off by taking in an entertaining draw in League Two between Albion Rovers and Stenhouse Muir.
This looks like a really good game.
I was going to say, what is the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast without some kind of long-form discussion about Stenhouse Muir? Now, this was a fucking good game of football, man. The Rovers celebrated their 140th birthday by moving off the foot of the division. James Leslie opened the scoring for the Rovers with a well-placed header immediately before the first half whistle. Then substitute Will Sewell brought Stenny level. Callum Wilson put the Vers back in front with a neat finish, but Ross Forbes restored parity with a late penalty after Ewan Wilson handled a goal-bound shot. And right at the death, Naya Joseph hit the bar with a very well-placed effort. Rovers are now in ninth, as we mentioned, courtesy of their better goal difference than Ann Athletic, and Stenny are still in fourth.
How did you react to Naya Joseph hitting the bar?
Honestly, I can remember it. It was like, when he hit the bar, you're like, oh my God, and just standing there open mouth, because the ball started pinging about in the middle of the box, and then it broke to Ross Philp, who took the thing in his like sort of controlled it in his midriff and put it past the post. But for that period when it hit the post, just open mouth, like gripping my mate's shoulders, you know, that you've got two mates either side, you've almost grabbed their collars just ready to jump into each other. It didn't quite happen, but It was a great game of football. Great game of football between two sort of very different teams. Like, on paper, obviously, Stenhouse Muir are the better side. I mean, it's reflected in the both teams' expectations for the season, the league table itself. But you've got a midfield. You've got two very different midfields. You've got a midfield there of Nat Wedderburn and Ross Forbes, guys who are really, really good when they have the ball at their feet.
Can they run?
Don't like to run. Don't rate run. You know,
I'm not sure they don't like to run. They just can't run.
No, they really don't like.
They officially cannot run.
Ross Forbes tried to cut out a cross at one point, and he jogged for that, and it didn't work because Albion Rovers scored. When the ball was played, and Nat Wedderburn doesn't like running. Just doesn't like running at all. But they're coming up against a midfield of like James Leslie and Blair Malcolm and. I think it's Kieran Fleming. Guys, that's something that you'll get from Albion Rovers. I've always said that. It doesn't really matter who that. The only really shit Albion Rovers team I've seen was John Brogan's team. You know, the team that Kevin Harper had to come in and take over.
The signing players of the West of Scotland second division.
Fucking hell, man. They were stinking. That's the worst Albion Rovers team I've ever seen. But anytime you play Albion Rovers, and I'd say regardless of who the players are, regardless of who the manager is, you always get energy and enthusiasm and abundance. And that's certainly what Albion Rovers had. I've seen them twice now this season. They're a far better side than their league position would suggest.
But you keep saying that. You keep saying that, but they are, like, they've literally just come off the bottom of the table that Saturday there. Why is it that you keep saying they're far better than their position suggests?
They don't have a consistent goal scorer.
They
don't have a consistent goal scorer. That's the problem. I think they certainly create enough chances. Again, I'm going by the. I can only really go by the two games that I've seen. They certainly create a lot of chances. They don't have anyone that can put the ball in the back of the net with a degree of regularity. Scott Roberts, a player who you'll know quite well from his time at Rovers, he was playing as a striker.
I looked at the lineup on Saturday and saw that Scott Roberts was the kind of lone forward. I was surprised. Put it that way.
Yes, aye. But it was a performance from Albion Rovers where there was really no failures. And there was, I mean, like last season, Stenhouse Muir beat them 4-0. Stenhouse Muir went up since we were four up after 20 minutes in that game, and there's a boy playing for them at, I think he's playing right back or left back, his name's Adam Fernie, and that was the worst individual performance I'd seen from an opposition player all season. He was really good at the weekend. I was actually surprised that the Rovers had kept on. He was really good. Ewan Wilson playing another flank, he was good. Blair Malcolm, James Leslie mentioned, really good, but I thought Malcolm was the best player in the park. And it's that... I suppose maybe you're right. I can go by what I've seen there. Perhaps other supporters will have seen the Rovers and think they're absolutely rubbish. I've seen them twice. I think they're a good side. There's players from that team that I would want to see playing for the Warriors.
So do you suspect they're going to stay up?
Oh, 100%. I've said Bonnie Rigg will finish bottom. So I think I said that on the last week's show. Bonnie Rigg will finish bottom. Bonnie Rigg will keep the Vers up.
And Steny? Still confident that they will challenge at the top?
I think that was in the circumstances, a good point, because they equalised in the 87th minute. So a good point in the circumstances, but if you're serious about winning league titles, you can't go to the team who's bottom of the table, regardless of what I've said about them, that I think they're a decent side. You can't go to the team that's bottom of the table and not beat them, particularly when Stirling Albion, Dumbarton and East Fife all won. So now the Warriors are, that's 8 points from the top of the table. And I know that no league titles have been won in October, November. But I was talking to my friends about this. There's a real sense that this could be another season that just completely passes Stenhousemuir by. We've said so many times that this League Two is the most open that it's been for three seasons. Yep. No Queen's Park, no Cove Rangers, no Kelty Hearts, a team where there is not necessarily an outstanding side, but that's a good thing for everyone else, that everyone can see themselves as viable contenders to win promotion or whatever. But I just worry that even at this stage, that Stenhousemuir do look a wee bit adrift, and some of the issues that have just plagued Stephen Swift's time since he's taken charge of the club are just still there manifesting. You can say there was injuries because Sean Crichton was out, Nicky Jameson was out, two guaranteed starters.
Every team was injuries.
But these are two guys who would be guaranteed starters at centre-back. Callum Yates is out for long-term. He would have played as well. And I think the team did quite well to cover for those injuries. But it just feels like it could be like having lost at Stirling Albion the previous week, despite, you know, giving them a good game, a draw was probably a fair result in that match, giving them a good game and still losing. That's the sign that you just become a wee bit despondent. And I think, you know, the expression, you're only as good as your last game. I really think that applies to someone like Stephen Swift.
That doesn't bode well.
It doesn't. I was trying to look at the game because I don't necessarily think that anyone played badly for the Warriors either. I thought it was like we mentioned it when we addressed this game. It was a good game of football between two pretty decent sides. I was trying to look at what happened with Stenny's goals. I suppose that the player might be at fault. Like Michael Miller didn't track James Leslie's run for the header. It's actually a really good header that he puts in. It just seems to go through a crowd of players. Clangers Brennan was getting a bit of heat. But I'm not sure if that's because he was legitimately at fault for the goal or people just don't like him. I think it's
either is possible.
He sees it late though. I mean, the camera angle on the Warriors TV highlights is really well placed. It does go through a crowd of people. Very difficult for the goalkeeper to get down to save it. So I'm kind of not going to be too harsh on him. I think that the second goal, I mean, Charlie Riley has touched to take, he knows that he's faster than Ross Forbes. He knows that he's faster than him. You can see the touch when he gets the ball played into him and he basically uses his body, just sprints ahead of Ross Forbes, touch, bang, into the box. You could perhaps say Forbes and Miller could have done better to close down the cross. Maybe Ross Philp could have been better at tracking Callum Wilson's run into the box to stop him from finishing. It all happens very quickly. So you perhaps look at that, but it's just that these are the games where it's the sort of thing where no one really plays badly, but you still don't win, that you're kind of just like, oh, just a wee bit scarred.
I can totally appreciate that.
You know, what I would say though, Matty Yates, what a player he is. He is one of the best players I've seen in League Two this season. He's an absolute wee superstar. And Stenhousemuir are very lucky to have got him on a 2-year contract because he could play one level higher based on what I've seen.
So League One.
League One, yes, that's one level higher from League Two. The games are up next. Albion Rovers have got Stirling Albion, probably not the team you'd want to face at the moment.
No, that's a Stirling Albion one.
Okay, Stenishmere versus East Fife. They played each other twice already this season. The Warriors have won on both occasions 2-1.
East Fife are due a win. They've been quite unlucky against them so far.
I think that the both Stenishmere deserve to win on both occasions against them.
Okay.
Listen, it's okay, Sean. A lot of the time you and I disagree, you'll come with a long-winded point and I'll be like, absolutely, Sean, I agree with you. I agree with you entirely. So it's sometimes good when we disagree with one another. It's just frustrating. It's frustrating because on paper, you look at all the constituent parts in that Stenny's team and they just seem to be like, you mentioned about Queen's Park being greater than some of the parts. You kind of look at all the individual parts that make up the Stenny's team and it is less than the sum of its parts. And I don't know who's to, probably the manager, if you can't find that balance that they paid money for Will Sewell. Sewell is, his goal was very well taken. It was the through ball from Matty Yates was lovely, just the wee pass to take him away from, I think it's Ayrton Sonker. Sonker looks a wee bit flat footed. What a size of a boy he is, by the way. Like, I was there with Robert Borthwick at the match. He was like, look at the build in him. Like, he was taken aback. Look at the build in him, he said. I said, no, Robert, look at the size of him. He's huge, absolutely enormous. He had a good game. Tam Orhut found it quite difficult against him. But that pass from Matty Yates took it away. So a lot of money was paid for Sewell, relatively speaking. Not necessarily seen that if you're paying money for a centre forward who has now become your first player you bring off the bench, can't expect a wee bit more than that.
He's kind of scoring now, though.
Aye, but I mean, I hope you get like 25 goals a season. When Steny pay money for a player, I want him to go on and lift the World Cup at some point. That's the degree of expectation that's placed in him.
You want Steny to sign Rye?
I would like, imagine that Steny should have signed a World Cup winner. Great, who is it? It's Bobby Charlton. Is he capable of playing? Is he still got that magic in his boots? Probably not. But just before we finish up League Two, Sean, Anna Athletic are now bottom of the table. And this is something that's caught me really by surprise because I expected them to actually go and win the bloody thing. But they've been wretched so far this season. Lost at Dumbarton. Dumbarton beat them 1-0. A Greg Wild header. Where has it gone wrong for Peter Murphy's side?
I find it quite interesting in terms of quite often at the start of the season we say that the League Cup form doesn't necessarily suggest the same when it comes to league form. But normally we talk about that in terms of teams that are struggling in the League Cup that we don't expect to struggle. But Anna, it's somebody who's been brilliant in the League Cup but then dreadful in the league.
Yeah.
And the fact that they could come out on top against Ayr and Queen's Park and there was somebody else above them in the league that they managed to be on penalties, I think. Then took Aberdeen to extra time in the League Cup. The fact that they're struggling in the league, I don't really understand it.
I think I spoke about them, again, on A View from the Terrace. That's my only frame of reference. But I spoke about them in a section that's probably likely to be cut just because they seem to do that. Anytime I bring a decent point, it seems to be get cut. I thought we'd rather talk about top flight teams than League Two jobbers. That's politics, absolute politics. No, I'm being facetious, of course. I think that the point that I made was that I think that their biggest strength is also their biggest weakness in Tommy Goss. I think Tommy Goss is a really good striker, and I think he's someone capable, like Matty Yates, that can play one level higher, League One, for instance. But because they've got a striker who's quite good at being physical, noising up defenders quite good in there, it's just an easy option for them to go, and they become quite one-dimensional and quite easy to play against. And
which wasn't what they were last season.
No, it wasn't, because the guy like Owen Moxon, who's one of the best midfielders in the division,
I checked, and he started every week for Carlisle.
That's brilliant, and that's absolutely fantastic.
I mean, he's a really good player.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you want to see. I was worried. I'm not 100% sure what league the standard of English football in League One and League Two is. However, if you're going from an athletic part-time football and you're in your sort of like early to mid-20s, and you've not really, I mean, I know you played for Queen of the South, but it's a big jump up, and you wonder how's he going to adapt to like full-time training, how's he going to adapt to what's a very physical league, and he seems to have taken to aplomb. That's great. And the fact that we're speaking so highly about him shows how much of an impact he had for Annan. And the very difficult player to replace, because these guys only come around like once a decade and they don't have him anymore. So they don't have anyone that's really putting their foot in the ball in the middle of the park. And that's where the team are suffering. And I'm not sure how Peter Murphy addresses it. I do think that his time at Annan has all been broadly positive, though, if you're to like look at it over the piece. So I don't think he's any under immediate pressure. I imagine he'll be able to turn it around. But I can't see Annan. Just the idea of them finishing bottom just seems absurd to me.
Especially when people regarded him as one of the favourites to win the league. However, I think if you're getting to January time and they're still bottom of the league, I can see them jettisoning Peter Murphy.
I hope that's not the case. Murphy seems all right. And if they jettison him, they'll probably jettison Colin McMenamin. And as I've said many, many times, the Annan assistant manager is one of my all-time favourite Stenhouse Muir players. I will not hear a bad word said against him. So don't even think about it, Sean.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything bad about
it. No, just as well. I'm driving the car up to Kirkcaldy and just, like the Tango Man, big double-handed slap across the face.
No, I just wouldn't let you in.
Hear the door. Who's out of the door? It's Craig Telfer. He said he was coming around to slap me. You going to let him in? Nah.
No.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll wait till you go to your work the next day. I'll sleep in my car like some sort of dad that's not allowed to see his kids anymore. And then I'll wait for you. The worst thing would be, actually, I'd probably just fall asleep in the car. You'd leave for work and just go to work and wake up and you're gone.
Yeah, that's right. You wake up at 10:30.
I was wasted just stinking of alcohol and ginsters.
I've been working for 2 hours.
I think that's enough, Sean.
I think so.
I hope you have learned a lot about... I hope you've learned a lot. Like me and Sean are some fucking fantastic teachers. Eh? Well, I hope you've enjoyed yourselves at least. Sean and I don't have a clue what we're talking about. We do hope you have enjoyed yourself. We are off to record a Patreon. We're going to be talking about Lewis Vaughan's comeback for Raith Rovers, one of the high points at the weekend. And if you want to listen to that, the only way you can is by subscribing. There are hours and hours and hours of content, thousands of podcasts, quite literally thousands of podcasts about everything to do with football, quizzes about football, and a little bit more about football. So there's something there for everyone who likes football.
Podcast Network.